Ever find yourself in a hard spot that you feel like you're not sure if it's worth continuing? Maybe you were inspired, but now the inspiration is kind of gone and it just kind of feels hard, maybe even pointless. Pesach comes to teach us an incredible truth about life's ups and downs and what we need to get through those downs. Welcome back. I'm Gila Ross, author of Living Beautifully and host of the Power Up podcast, where we share ideas that inspire.
We're gonna start today by asking a very simple question. What is freedom, right?
It's the ability to do whatever you want to do.
Yeah. You're saying that, and I had a conversation with one of my teenagers. She's like, I can't wait to be an adult so I can do what I want. And I'm like, yeah. There's a meme that shows like a woman washing dishes and saying like, you remember when you were a kid and you wanted to grow up so you could do whatever you wanted? Like, how's that working out for you? If the definition of freedom is to do whatever we wanted, are we free people?
It depends on, like, you're right, there's your wants, but then there's higher, like, wants, right? Like, yes, I would want to eat. There were some other things that I could have bought for 50 cents and taken home and, like, extra strudel and stuff, but really, my knees can only take so much weight in my back, and so what I want even more than that is to not be in pain, so I have to not eat everything I want anymore. So I think maybe it's like, which want?
Yeah, and how sometimes the you know, the different wants interfere with each other, right? I think, you know, the example you gave is a great example, right? I want to be healthy, right? Well, that sometimes means that I have to give up other wants, right? I want to also, you know, stay up late at night watching something or scrolling on something, and then I'm not going to get enough sleep, and then, you know, or I'm going to eat something that's, I may want more, but it doesn't give my body what it needs. I'm going to ask another question. I'm going to jump into another question, okay? What's Pesach about?
Freedom,
right? Yes, it's about freedom, right? It's the Jews came out of Egypt, we became free, we celebrate our freedom. What's the most labor-intensive festival in... Forget, I was going to say in the Jewish calendar, and I'm going to say, like, in the calendar, right? I don't know if there's any other festival. I don't know. I'm not an expert on other religions, so I don't know if there is. But Pesach is renowned for the amount of work it takes, and whatever level a person keeps it to, right? You have, you know, the extreme of people who are, let's say, for example, like Chabad, that don't buy processed products and they peel everything, in, right? Or you have whatever, even people that don't necessarily keep the full laws of it, but they do something, right? Like, they're still going out of the way. So isn't it strange that we celebrate the, you know, like, wouldn't it be more fitting if we decided, like, Pesach, celebrate it, everyone get up and go to the beach for a week, right? I mean, Judaism could do that, right?
You're like, no. Have that, like, go on a cruise, Pesach cruise, and... Sorry,
a lot of people do that.
Yeah, Pesach programs. Yes, there are people, and there's, you know, it is, but it's not mandated, right?
I was
right?
Just trying to make a humor.
Yes, yes.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So, why is it that we celebrate freedom in such a labor intensive way? Okay. Any thoughts?
It's around food. and Jewish holidays, that's the main thing. So even though it's labor intensive, it's food intensive.
It's labor intensive, it's food intensive. Yep.
But also, they had to labor and they had to do all this work.
Interesting.
While they were
coming out of Egypt.
Egypt and all that. So we can kind of relate that. And then when it's, you sit down and you eat, it's like...
Beautiful.
Yeah. And just the restrictions, I think, that everybody has on a daily basis, maybe that we don't face. that it's a small thing because it's food and it's hard when you're hungry or you want something specific. I mean, my husband calls it the week of starvation. I'm like, you should have seen what it was like before we had all the products that, you know, that make it so much easier.
My kids say the same thing, and I'm like,
I cook extra special. Oh my gosh, everything they super want that I can work out and make sure he has
welcome
everything.
To the world of celiac.
Right, like, so that's exactly right. Exactly. You know, we don't have to deal with that in our family, and nobody we don't have major. I mean, I'm allergic to shellfish, like, not a major crisis as a Jew, like,
right.
So it gives us, I always say, it gives us that opportunity to kind of reflect, like, we're pretty lucky.
And what you're both saying are very good points. And what I'm going to try and show in the next little bit of time that we have together is that the way we celebrate Pesach is actually really helps us get into the understanding what freedom is and experiencing what freedom is. So let's try and understand what freedom is. Okay. Kara mentioned the idea of like the two different wants, right? We have, let's call it the long-term want and then the short-term want, right? It's the long-term want is usually like the overarching thing, right? The thing that you're working towards, or the thing that you know, when you talk about eating healthy, right? That's a long-term want, right? And then we have the short-term want, the thing that I want right now, right? I don't know what it is. To press the snooze on my alarm
eating
and not go
cupcake.
For a walk. Go for it, have a whole box of chocolates, whatever it is, right? Like there's the short term and there's the long term wants, right? So freedom, right? What the definition that I'd like to go with today is freedom is breaking through what's holding us back from living in true alignment with our higher self, right? And you could switch higher self for our deepest wants, right? But it's holding us. Freedom is really, it's breaking through the things that are holding us back from living in true alignment with ourselves. Let's talk a little bit about what holds us back. What holds us back? Or I'm gonna ask it slightly differently, right? Mm-hmm. When you think of free people, right, do we think of ourselves as free?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ish. Right? Yeah. Kara was like, maybe. So, do you want to, people who said like, yes, but like hesitant, what's the hesitation? What's not free? I mean, if you think about it, here we are all living in America, right? It's a free country. You know, what's not free?
Well, I think sometimes if you go to a country or you're in an atmosphere where you can't really do what you need to do or want to do. I mean, I contrast like different countries with the United States and how it feels to live here as opposed to somewhere else.
Right, and that you'd say that we are free in comparison to that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking more of, in our minds, what keeps us kind of, you know, slaves. Our thinking is what holds us back from being free on that level.
Yeah, because, I mean, if I asked everyone here, like, what are the three wants that you have, right? The three big things that you want in your life, right? And then I ask each of you, so are you working towards it, but, like, have you got it? I think most of us would say no, right? There is something within our lives. So absolutely, we have a tremendous amount of freedom, right? And we have to be grateful for that, and we have to acknowledge that. And I think, you know, freedom isn't just something that we celebrate around Pesach time. I think freedom is something that we all grapple with in our own lives. And I don't know if we necessarily call it freedom, but imagine if the thing that's holding you back from getting the thing that you want, right? Someone will turn around to you and say, I'll take it away from you, and then you can go get that thing, right? It'll no longer be a struggle. Would you say yes to that? Yes? Yes, right? Because that would be freedom. It's breaking through from that thing that's holding you back from living in true alignment with your higher self. Were you going to say something, Cara?
I was just going to say that I think the reason I said so is that there are a lot of people in this country that, and I don't want to get into it, right, because there's a lot of political issues, that they're not free to do the things that they, you know, that are important for themselves, or they live in fear of, like, we were pulled over while I was driving in the middle of the night to Wyoming because I couldn't regulate my speed because I couldn't see, like, markers on the side of the roads. There was no light. I was afraid to use cruise control. And I told the police officer that, but as he came up, I said to my daughter and my husband, I'm like, all right, everybody hands out. Like, let there be no mistakes, and nobody moves when the police officer comes to the window. But we don't have to be in as much fear of that situation as some other people.
Yeah, yeah. And you're raising a very good point, because we live in America. And again, I think both things are true, right? And, you know, there are lots of things that are holding people back, right? There's socioeconomic status, right? People say, oh, you have freedom to choose your job, right? Some of us have the freedom to choose our job, some of us don't, right? People, God forbid, who are in abusive relationships, that's not freedom, right? And even just, you know, people, like there's so many different people have so many different things that are holding them back, right? And are impinging on their freedom, right? What I wanted to kind of look at now is, how do we get that freedom? Because there is, I think we can kind of say that there are two classifications of things that hold us back, right? There are external things that hold us back, right? And there are internal things that hold us back, right? There are external things is you know, someone who's in prison, right? God forbid, the hostages, right? Like, there are external things, and when I talk about that, I'm reminded of what Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, writes, and he was an Austrian Jew, a psychologist or psychiatrist, I can't remember which one, who went through the Holocaust, and he founded logotherapy afterwards. And one of the things that he said is that even in Auschwitz, right, in the deepest of hell, the Nazis could take everything away from us except for our free will, right? Except for our human dignity, right? Our power to choose. And again, I think when you hear it from someone who went through that hell, and he's able to say that even in the deepest of hell, right, where they were prisoners and they were abused and they were tortured, right? And he still held on to that ability to know that I have the freedom to choose. There's that element of that. Perhaps there's something incredibly powerful that no matter what our external situations are, and I'm not discounting the external situations, but we have the ability to hold on to our human free choice, right? We have the ability. Viktor Frankl talks about, like, the within between stimulus and response, there is a space, right? Between what happens to us and how we respond, there's a space, and in that space is our freedom to choose, right? So how do we, as people, as human beings, access that free will? Pesach teaches us how, okay? Because the Pesach story is weird. And you may not have noticed this, but it's a very strange thing what happens over Pesach. Is if you go back to the original story, what was the purpose of God taking us out of Egypt? So we wouldn't be slaves, so we'd be free, and there was a higher purpose to that as well. We would believe in God and become His people, right? Become the Amham Nefra, the chosen people, which means we are chosen for responsibility, right? To become a light to the nation, to the nations, to become God's people, right? So that's the process of what the purpose is coming from, right? So there's kind of like a couple of stages of what happens. The Jews are in Egypt, terrible times for them. They cry out to God, they pray to God. God brings the 10 plagues, right? Incredible, incredible wonders, incredible miracles that everyone is standing up and noticing, right? Then God tells them, take the Korban Pesach, the sheep, which was the god of the Egyptians. And the Jews were able to do that. Tremendous sacrifice, right? These were people that were slaves for 210 years, and they were able to take the god of their oppressors and tie them to the bed and you know, slaughter them and have them as the carbon Pesach. Incredible sacrifice. And God says on that night, he takes them up. Middle of the night, it's like, time to go, let's go. And the Jews come out of Egypt. Incredible, again, incredible, incredible miracles. And then what happens next is the Jews go out of Egypt. They come, they're going through the desert, and it's awful for them, right? Because what happens is the Egyptians decide to chase them, and they come to the sea. So they have the sea in front of them, the Egyptians chasing them, and it kind of looks like, okay, God, you took us out of Egypt for this. Right, you took us out, so we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, like literally, right? And then God says, keep going. And they go, and the sea splits, they come through, right? Now we would think, this is amazing, right? They're out of Egypt, they're oppressors, the Egyptians have followed them in. Unfortunately, they are, the sea comes back together, and they are killed. And the Jews are free from Egypt, they're free from their oppressors. Okay, what should happen now is the Jews, God should give them the Torah. After all, that's what the purpose of taking us out of Egypt is. It's not just that we should be, you know, free from Egypt, but to bring us to become this elevated nation who show the world the morality, right? That's not what happens next. What happens next is the Jews go through the desert for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, right? They're traveling through the desert for 7 weeks. Now, what is the desert, if you think about it? It's a place that is symbolic of, like, no growth, death, darkness, like, nothing happens here. Why does God do that? It doesn't make any sense. You're taking us out of Egypt so that we should become your people. You've done all these incredible things, right? And the Jews, you have to understand that, the Jews, at that point, they come out of, on the other side of this, of the splitting of the sea. They were on such an elevated spiritual level that we're told that the simplest Jew, right, was on a higher spiritual level than prophets of later generations. Okay, we're talking, they were on an incredible, incredible high level. Why the delay?
To test their commitment.
Perhaps. And what's the purpose of testing their commitment? Like, what's the purpose of testing their commitment?
To see if they're worthy of becoming Hashem's people?
They weren't worthy. We know that they weren't worthy. It's a good point you're bringing, but we know that they weren't worthy because we're told the reason why they had to be taken out of Egypt right that moment was because they were on the what's called the 49th level of impurity, right? Meaning that they were one level away from the point of no return, right? So God redeemed them, not because they were worthy, but because that was the only way, right? Mm-hmm. They would have been, God had to swoop in and lift them up, otherwise they would have gone. We would have been at the point of no return, and we would never have come back from that. Okay, so here's the thing. Okay, so what happens is, and then we're going to see how it relates to our life, is Sue kind of pointed out, that the Jews were not worthy of it, right? They were not worthy of redemption at all. Yes, they did the sheep, which showed tremendous self-sacrifice, but they were almost completely assimilated into Egyptian culture, right? God saved them, and God sort of lifted them up on this incredibly high spiritual level. How? By all these miracles, right? By the ten plagues, by splitting the sea, by taking them out of Egypt, right? All these incredible things. But it wasn't real, right? Now God kind of had to, God took them through the desert. Why? In order so that they could become that, but independently. And I'll give you an analogy of how this works. If you've ever watched a baby learn to walk, right? So the baby, you know, developmentally, they learn to stand up, holding on. They hold an adult's hand, and the adult and the baby's walking, right? Great. Mm-hmm. Except baby's not really walking, right? We as the adults know the baby's not walking. Now imagine if you could get into the head of a baby, right? They're holding on to whoever's the adult in their life's hands, and they're walking. They think this is fantastic, right? I'm walking. What does the adult do at that point? Let's go. What happens to the baby at that point? It falls, right? Imagine the baby thinking at that point, like, how cruel. How could you, like, if you love me, how could you do this to me, right? I was walking, I was on top of the world, and now I, cruel. And now I'm on the floor, right? I don't know what goes on inside a baby's head, but babies just get up and walk again, right? Why do we let go? Why do we do such a cruel thing to let go?
Teach them independence.
Teach them independence, because we know in an extreme situation, right, the adult never let go of that baby's hand, they'd never learn to walk independently. It's the same thing like riding a bike, right? You have to take the training wheels off, you have to let go, and whoever's learning to ride a bike is going to have to wobble, right? They're probably going to fall as well, right? And why do we do that? It's so that the child or the person is learning to walk independently, right? And that's what happened in Egypt. God gave them this intense, you know, inspiration, this intense spiritual burst, right? What was the point of that? The point wasn't to lift them up. The point was to show the Jews, it was kind of a gift to show the Jews, this is who you can become. But in order to become it, I have to take my hands away, God is kind of saying. And you're going to have to learn to do it yourself. And that's what happened. And that's the process that happens in our life the whole time, right? You go somewhere, you hear something, you meet someone, you see something, you get inspired. And you're like, that's it. This is amazing, right? I'm a changed person right now. We get a little bit older and we're like, jaded, like, you know, I know what's going to happen, right? What's the point of the inspiration? The point of the inspiration isn't that, okay, now I'm a changed person. The point of the inspiration is that this is who I can become. It's a gift from God that is showing us this is who you can become. God is then going to take that away from us, right? And that's the down that we kind of all experience at some point, right? What's guaranteed about inspiration is that it's going to go, right? And most of the time, what happens is, you know, let's just say you go to a class and you hear about the incredible idea of not talking badly about other people. And you're like, that's it. This is beautiful, right? Such a beautiful concept to bring each other up, to not put them down. I'm never going to talk badly about someone else. And you guys are laughing, right? Why are you laughing? Because you know, right? What's going to happen next is for the first day, maybe you manage. Second day, maybe you manage. Day three, boom. Right? And what do we feel at that point? We feel like, there I go again. I committed something and I can't keep through. There I go again. Like, what is wrong with me? Here's the important thing. There's nothing wrong with you at that point. This is where the growth happens. The growth doesn't happen in the inspiration, right? The inspiration is kind of the idea of who you can become. You walk away feeling like I'm inspired. This is who I want to be. I want to be that person that builds other people with my words. That's a picture that God is giving you. This is who you can become. You're not there yet, right? You might feel like you're there for the first 2 days, which is great. Enjoy it while it lasts. And know that this is a picture of who I can become. And then you're going to have to work to get there, right? And how is that? How do we do that process? It's kind of like how the baby does it. Fall, get up, fall, get up. Fall, get up, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, again, I'm going out on a limb here because I don't know what goes on inside babies' minds, but I think the beauty of a baby is they don't overthink it, right? They don't like fall down and they're like, you know, think, oh my gosh, I fell, I'm not, whatever. They just get up, right? You know, what's wrong with me that I fell, right? They, you know, that's the process. The process is the day by day, the long haul. If a person can go through the long haul, what do they get to? What do they get to? So let's go back to our original story.
Freedom.
Yes. And what is that freedom, right? That freedom is transcendence, right? So if you go back to the original time that we see this pattern, which is the Jews coming out of Egypt, right? So they at the splitting of the sea, they're on this incredibly high elevated spiritual level, right? Which God has lifted them up from the depth of their assimilation, their impurity. But it's not real yet. And then what happens is they go through the desert. They go through the 6-7 weeks. They come to Sinai. They come to Sinai as people who are capable of hearing the Ten Commandments from God themselves, right? But this time they arrive as people independent. It's not that God has given, yes, God gave them the gift of listening to them, but it's not like God had kind of like lifted them up, right? This time they went through the work and they arrived there as it, right? So it's, and I bet if you all spent a moment to think about it, right? And I'll share a story with you about a friend of mine who experienced this. I bet if you all spent a moment and thought about something that you were working on in your life in the past, that now is something that's part of you, right? I was when we lived in Manchester, I was one of my students, one of my my friends. So she when I kind of first met her, her husband was becoming more interested in Judaism, and her husband was kind of pushing for them to keep Shabbat, and she wasn't on board with it, right? And in fact, it was a point of contention in her life, in the relationship about it, and they worked through it. And I remember, like, after I'd known her for a few years, post COVID and post a whole bunch of different things, I once turned around to her and I said to her, "How's Shabbat going for you?" And she looked at me, she's like, "I don't know, it's just something we do." And I looked at her and I was like, "Well, hold on a second, like, can you appreciate the beauty in that? That had I said to you 3 years ago, when this was such a big thing, like, in your life, where, like, he wants to do more Shabbat and I don't want to do more Shabbat, right? And, you know, and said to you, you know what, in 3 years' time, this is going to just be a part of your life and your routine and who you are. You would have told me, you have no idea what's going on. You have no idea what's going on in my life. You have no idea who I am. Not happening, right?" And yet it happened. It happened. And I encourage you, right? Spend some time afterwards. Think about whether this is true in our lives, right? Because we notice the struggle, right? We notice the times that we fail, but we don't necessarily notice the times where it's become a part of us, right? It's kind of like, you know, like when you have a cold, and you wake up and you're like sniffly, and like it's such a big thing, right? And you sound like you have a cold, and then you know you get better, and we don't necessarily notice it. And then someone will come up and say, "Oh, how's your cold?" And you're like, "Good morning."
Is that coffee? Good morning.
Yes,
can I take the coffee?
You can definitely go. There we go.
There's
thank
Danish
you.
In the kitchen too. You can take
from
the dairy side.
Right, we don't necessarily notice the things in our lives where it becomes part of it, right? And someone asks you, "Oh, how's your cold?" And you're like, "Oh, I'm better. It feels great," right? So okay, let's try and wrap it up and think. In our lives, how does this happen? Right, there are three phases in our life. Right, it's not really three phases. It's a pattern. Right, it's a pattern that, because we see this over and over and over again, and it can happen, like the pattern can happen in different areas simultaneously. It could be in different places in the pattern in our life, right? First one is there's the excitement, flash of inspiration, right? It's the phase that we all love to live in, right? When no one wants to wake up in the morning feeling like, meh, right? We all want to wake up in the morning feeling like, yes, right? But that's phase one, right? And again, understand that the point of this phase is that it gives us a picture of who we can become, right? Then becomes phase number two. It's the long, lonely road of work, right? And interestingly, we see this as, in Judaism, it's a whole other discussion, but Judaism talks about male energies in the world and female energies in the world, right? Phase number one is a male energy, right? That brief spark of inspiration. Phase number two is the female energy, and we see this biologically, right? What goes into the creation of the child? There's kind of two phases. There's phase number one, which is conception, and that's pretty much the male contribution to the child, and it's beautiful, it's exciting, it lasts very short, right? And it's important. You can't have a child without that phase, right? Phase number two is what the female energy that brings into the creation of a child. And what is that? That's the pregnancy, it's the birth, right? The labor, the birth. It's long, not as exciting, right? Hard, right? And the work of that, you know, if you look at it from that point, what's the work that we have to do at that point? The work at that point is a work of faith, right? Of knowing that the work is going, the process is going to lead to the results, right? Imagine if someone didn't understand the process of you know, an alien dropped into this world and you know, was watching the process of birth of a child. They would think it's horrific, right? But we don't, because we know, right? And it's that faith that it is. And it's the same thing with us, is that when we're going through the process of something, right? When we're experiencing the ups and the downs, right? The small wins, the things that we wish we wouldn't have done the way we did. What we have to know, what we have to work on really, is faith, is knowing that this is where the growth is happening, and that I'm doing the right thing, right? Because so often we when we're in this phase, we're like, what's wrong with me? Nothing is wrong with you, right? This is what's supposed to happen. It's supposed, it feels hard because it is hard, right? It's supposed to feel hard, right? Because this is the work of change. And then when a person can go through it, we come to transcendence, right? Which means is the gift is you, but a greater you, right? And why I call it transcendence is because if you think about, you know, the analogy of the birth of a child, right? Is the child 50% mum, 50% dad?
No.
Absolutely not, right? If I were to ask you, are you 50% your mum, 50% your dad? I'm like, no, I'm my own person, thank you, right? So again, it's transcendence. You have this like miraculous new human that's completely transcendent. And it's the same thing with us, right? If you go back to my friends in the UK, who now Shabbat is just a regular part of what they do, she's a different person through that process, right? If you think about something that you have gone through this process with, when you get to stage three, we change, we're different because of it. Okay? So what are some important things to bear in mind on this process? Okay? So number one is really, really expectation, right? It's flipping that expectation. We want to be in phase one. We have to understand that phase one is good and important. It's very good and very important. But phase two is also good and important. So when we hit phase two, it's not like we have to think to ourselves, oh my gosh, what am I doing wrong? And this happens all the time. It happens in relationships. It happens in lifestyle changes. It happens in every work, right? In everything. A project that you're running, it happens in everything. The inspiration wears off. We're in that phase of like, okay, I've got to get this done. And we think like, what am I doing wrong? Why is it so hard? It's not because anything's wrong. It's because this is supposed to be happening. And I'll share with you an analogy of that helps us, right? Imagine someone's in the desert, in a forest, dark forest night, stormy night, and they're lost. And all of a sudden, there's a flash of lightning, right? That's phase number one. What should the person do at that point? There's two options that a person can have. Is option number one is it's flash of lightning, run, right? Much smarter is the person who's like, there's a flash of lightning, let me look around and plan, right? What I need to do. What's the way out? And then when the lightning goes, because that's what's going to happen, they follow the plan, right? That's how we're supposed to do this, is that when we're inspired, we're tempted to be like, that's it, I'm a different person now, like never happening again. No. Use that time to plan. What is it? What is the small step that I can take in my life consistently, right? And by consistently, I mean that if you fail, you get back on it again. That's manageable for me. That's what we should use the inspiration for, that time of inspiration. And then when we're feeling like, how, you know, where is it gone? Like, why did I start this thing? Like, what, you know, I forgot what it is. That's the point where we have to just do it, regardless of how we feel, right? Like, it's like, keep going. I know there was a reason why I did this. I know this process works. I know it's supposed to feel hard because this is the point where I am becoming that vision, but I'm going to make it real. The one difference between the analogy of the stormy night in the forest and inspiration is that in the stormy night in the forest, the person is totally at the mercy of the lightning, right? But here, we also have some control, right? We have control over when we go to listen to things that will inspire us, when we go to who we surround ourselves with, right? And we can bring more light into our lives as well. So just to kind of sum up what we spoke about is that freedom is the ability to break through the things that are holding us back from being our higher self, right? And when we talk about the things that are holding us back internally, there's a process that we follow, a three-step process, right? Which is that number one, we get inspired, right? Something kind of ignites within us that want, that desire to have that thing or to be that thing. Then that's going to go, right? Which is good and normal, right? Because this is the part where we are building it into ourselves, where we are becoming that person, that thing, that person who it's just a part of what they do, right? And during that phase, our work is to really just be faithful to the plan we made when we were inspired and keep putting it in. And then we get to phase number three, where we become a greater person as a result of it, and we can choose something else that we want.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I'd love to hear what you thought about this. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you'll love my new book, Living Beautifully. You can check the show notes for where to get it. And please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out.